Attention! Attention! All Area 51 Stormers! That means you, Larry. Put down the flamethrower. Before we storm the military's worst-kept secret base, I want you to know that having 500,000 of you here really helps with my anxiety. The 20 guards who can fire 800 rounds a minute with their M16s won't be able to stop us all! Hey, where are y'all going?
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes.
Wait! What am I supposed to do with 500,000 egg salad sandwiches?
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Welcome to episode 87 of your monthly paranormal variety show. And having you here is better than finally getting the steps shoveled off after a miserable winter. Or, you know, maybe seeing that your ex-girlfriend slash boyfriend is doing terrible. So they deserve it. That's what they get for cheating on you. Why? Because you're wonderful. A masterpiece. Beautifully made. Important to people because you are important to me. Highly favored by your creator. Whether that's God or by the law of averages and physics working in tandem, you, my friend, are an oddball. And here on the show, you're family. And we are one. How the heck did we go from episode 84 to 87 since last time you listened to the episodes? Well, that's because you missed the two bonus episodes that came out. That's right. Our resident Dr. Laura never actually got her part in on time last show. So, you know, I decided to release hers a little bit later in the month as a kind of a bonus episode because it was really interesting. It was all about the coronavirus stuff. You guys have had a chance to listen to that. Very informative. Made me kind of less nervous about it, to be honest with you. And, you know, I know the Out of Newfoundland is a paranormal podcast. We want to scare you sometimes, but sometimes the real world is scary enough, and it was kind of reassuring to know that maybe we won't die of the flu. So that was nice. And then I was like, you know what? It was my birthday. It's true. I'm 36 years old now. I decided to throw out a birthday episode. Really, really cool. Joy Chronicles. That guest is just out of this world. She's like the female version of Garnett Schulhauser, who was on my show before. If you guys haven't had a chance to check out that bonus episode, check them all out. And rightfully so. Check out all the episodes, guys. I don't advertise the bonus episodes. They're for subscribers. So if you're a subscriber to the show, you already got it. So thank you very much. If you haven't subscribed to the show, well, there's two reasons last month alone to subscribe to this show, because sometimes there's bonus content. Also, it's just a really, really great way to help me grow the show. The more subscribers I get, the bigger my numbers. The bigger my numbers, the higher up I'm on lists. The higher up I'm on lists, the more people see it. It just grows and grows and grows and grows. It's kind of like a fungus, except, you know, it's not on your toes. It's in your ears. Maybe you shouldn't subscribe. I'll try reverse psychology. Don't subscribe to this podcast. If you don't subscribe to this podcast, you're a good person. There you go. Anyway, moving on. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so happy Max is here. You want to know why? Because I'm going on vacation at the end of this month. Yeah, that's right. I'm heading out on the 23rd. I'm gone. A full week. It's going to be delightful. And I won't be back till the very end of the month. Does that mean there's not going to be an episode on the 1st? Absolutely not. I'm going to make sure there's one recorded and ready to go just for you guys. So I'll be here for you on April 1st as well. I will not be an April Fool's this year. I will keep my streak alive. And, you know, as we head into the second half of this year, really, I just want to say thank you all so very, very much for all your support. Things have certainly picked up over the last month or so. There's usually a little lull after December, to be honest. January is usually a slow month in the podcasting world, but you guys just keep coming, man. You keep coming back. And I just, I really want to thank you for that. Weight training has been going great. You know, it's been a while since I kind of checked in with you guys. I'm still doing it. You know, I'm not a lazy person by nature, but like, I just got to a point in my life where I was like, I got to make a change here. Cause like, I'm so big, I could barely play with my kids. Like, this is crazy. I got to lose some weight. But then like, I realized I don't really want to lose weight. I want to get in great shape. And if the weight falls off, that's even better. So what I've been doing is a lot of heavy lifting. And man, oh man, I'm looking good. I really am. I did my measurements. I got an inch on both my arms, which is great. I lost almost 4 inches off my stomach. So that's excellent. I still have no butt whatsoever because, you know, I'm a white Irish guy and there's not much I can really do about it. But I'll be damned if I'm not squatting low to the ground, man, with heavy weights. So there you go. It's happening. Just really slow. How about you guys? You kept your New Year's resolutions? Why don't you tell me in the comments down below how things are going, man? I'd love to know. And, you know, as this podcast moves on now almost to the paranormal news segment, just know that things are going well with my family. I hope things are going well with yours. You know, March is a big month for a lot of people. March is like, okay, we're finally starting to hit the end of the winter season. Thank God. Once March is out of the way, April's there. And it's kind of just springs around the corner. But March is like, oh, it's an important month. You want to know why? Because two of the most important people in my life were born in March. Yeah, it's true. My mama and my wife. So there you go. A special birthday shout out to Steph and to Brenda. Thank you so much for my mother who brought me into this world, a footling birth that almost killed her, and my wife who probably wants to kick me with her foot a lot and, yeah, probably wants to kill me. So there you go. On with the show. Let's get into this month's Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, Paranormal News.
Somewhere between the funnies and the obituaries is, oh yes, the paranormal news.
2004 was a long, 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 long time ago, hey? Ghost Hunters debuted. It was just a sensation. Everyone loved it. It kicked off the ghost hunting craze. Everyone was a ghost hunter, myself included. We couldn't help ourselves. But now, the show, which has been off the air for quite some time, has been back. And now, it's going to be a season 2, which promises indisputable proof of the recent reboot. So let me think about that for a second with you guys. Indisputable proof. I mean, apparently they have caught it. Season 2 of the rebooted Ghost Hunters TV show will reportedly offer up concrete evidence of the afterlife. One of the most popular TV shows to hit U.S. screens, Ghost Hunters launched all the way back in 2004 and followed plumbers Jason Haas and Grant Wilson, two paranormal investigators who, alongside a team of fellow enthusiasts, spent their spare time looking for evidence of ghosts. Wilson left the show in 2012, and Haas announced that the show would be ending its relationship with Sci-Fi Channel in 2016, effectively ending the 12-year run. Last year, however, the show was brought back from the dead, so to speak, this time with Wilson resuming hosting duties. The first rebooted season ran from August 21st to October 30th, 2019 on A&E, and now it has been announced that a second season will be arriving on April 8th, 2020, so that's just around the corner. Yeah, it's this month coming. It's just around the corner. Ghost Hunters returns with indisputable evidence of the afterlife. In season 2, the team leads into uncharted territory to be the first to investigate reports on paranormal phenomena in some of the nation's most remote locations. Despite mysterious and unnerving warnings from locals, the Ghost Hunters face their fears and stay on mission to help people confront terrifying paranormal encounters that have shaken them to their core. In doing so, they capture their most compelling, persuasive evidence in over a decade. Exactly what form of this indisputable evidence will be take and what it will take, however, remains to be seen. We'll just have to wait till April. I'm pretty excited. I'm really excited. I'm going to make sure I give these both Grant and Jason a little shout out here. You know, like their methods or not, it's still really wild that these guys are still on TV. They're entertaining as hell, and people love those shows. So God love them. I hope they do well. And indisputable proof, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Some things are not so obvious, right? How about when the police responds to proof of a report of demonic sounds? Sounds like a fun Friday night. Officers were called out to investigate a very strange incident in Pueblo, Colorado on February 13th. The bizarre incident, which took place around 3:30 a.m., saw employees at a local branch of McDonald's call the emergency services after being spooked by demonic sounds. According to the report, the sounds, which were described as being like a strange language combined with an unnerving barking, were coming from an unidentified screaming woman. The employees were so shaken by the incident that they refused to leave the building until morning. A total of three officers attended the scene and conducted a thorough search of the area. However, despite their best efforts, they were unable to determine who or what had produced those sounds. Some social media users have linked the incident to La Llorona, an infamous wailing ghost of Latin American folklore who is said to scream in anguish and torment. So there you go. With no definitive explanation forthcoming, however, the case continues to remain unsolved. I don't really want to solve it. I think that's creepy. That's scary, man. That is scary. Maybe, just maybe, this ghost is just starving and really wants to eat, so they went to go like the McDonald's and stuff. You know? Gonna be a cheapskate in the afterlife. Not like where the Egyptians used to like get buried with gold and stuff, you know. You know what though? The Egyptians, they loved their ghosts too. And an ancient Egyptian board game may have evolved into a conduit through which to contact the other side, is my next story. Known as Senet. This highly popular board game rose to prominence around 5,000 years ago and remained the game of choice of many Egyptians for the next several millennia. The game, which may have been a bit like backgammon, was played on a grid of 30 squares, and each player would roll a type of dice to determine how many squares to move their pawns. Some of the squares had a specific function akin to miss a turn or equivalent. What's particularly interesting, though, is that by around 4,300 years ago, artistic depictions of the game started to show participants playing against what appeared to be their deceased friends and relatives. How cool is that? The game began to shift from a mere form of entertainment to something with spiritual and ritualistic significance, with the passage of the pieces across the board coming to represent the passages of the soul traveling through the Egyptian realm of the dead and onto the afterlife. One board in particular, which is currently kept at the Egyptian Museum in San Jose, California, is thought to be one of the earliest examples exhibiting this transition. It features a square with a symbol of water, something associated with the River of the Dead. It may be one of the first times that this aspect of the journey through the afterlife is visually rendered on the board, said archaeologist Walter Christ. A very interesting thing. I mean, we have Ouija boards. They're by Parker Brothers. So, like, who made, like, this thing? Like, who was the equivalent back then? King Tut Board Games. I don't know. Oh, my God. What is going on with these radio bursts? Have you guys heard about this? I'm going to play an article, an interview, actually, from CBC now in a minute. Give them some credit here. The astronomers have discovered a first known example of a fast radio burst that repeats in a steady cycle. It's a phenomenon that has managed to defy explanation for many years. Powerful bursts of radio waves originating from beyond our galaxy that, despite lasting mere milliseconds, generate as much energy as the sun does an entire day. That's a lot. Now a team of astrophysicists in Canada have discovered what is thought to be the first example of a fast radio burst that not only repeats, but does so in a steady cycle. By studying data from the radio telescope used by the Canadian Hydrogen Intensity Mapping Experiment and cross-referencing it against earlier observations of the phenomena, the scientists were able to determine that this particular FRB repeats on a cycle of 16 days. Oh boy, that seems pretty intelligent to me. Situated in a spiral galaxy over 500 million light years away, the source of the burst could be some sort of celestial object in orbit around a distant star. However, it remains unclear how much an object could be producing such high energy bursts so frequently. Oh my god.
Is it Captain Marvel?
Tell me, it's gotta be Captain Marvel. While it seems unlikely that the answer will be forthcoming anytime soon, observations using more powerful telescopes in the future could help to finally unravel this mystery. I'm gonna play this little interview for you because it was really wild and sounded really cool. So go ahead and have a listen.
What is a repeating fast radio burst?
So first, fast radio bursts themselves were first discovered in 2007 using 2001 data. And what these things are is it's a really bright, they say bright, and you know, but a strong signal on a radio frequency that lasts just a millisecond or so, even shorter. So you can understand why they missed it. So, but these repeating ones, we only had known of one before that, and again discovered by a Canadian at McGill. And this repeating fast radio burst is the radio burst, but it kind of shifts on the radio frequency. So over and over, we don't know what they are.
And so what's the importance of this discovery?
Well, the discovery, first of all, it's a mystery. It's a mystery to be solved. And nobody likes, you know, if you don't understand something, you don't walk away and go, forget it, right? Astronomers want to figure this out. And so it's going to teach us, hopefully, if we discover more of these fast radio bursts, and this Canadian team has done it with a Canadian telescope, we might be able to understand, oh, maybe we don't understand other things in our own galaxy, in our own backyard. And maybe it's going to make us rethink things. And also, of course, teach us about where we came from, where the universe started.
And so you don't think that this is a sign of life off our planet?
You know, that people talk about that. Is this a powerful signal being beamed out by an alien civilization? I mean, personally, I don't think so. And that is not the leading theory. This is the leading theory is they're big, powerful magnetic stars.
And you were telling me in the commercial that what's incredible about this is how bright it is. And why is that interesting?
Well, because we have something similar in our own galaxy. We've seen pulsars, and they're rapidly spinning stars. They're kind of like that emit signals, or you know, bright signals, like a lighthouse, a cosmic lighthouse, if you will. And we see them here, and they're very bright and powerful, but these FRBs are trillions of times more powerful.
Trillions of times. So what do you, I can't even imagine what that would look like.
Yeah, right? Like, it's incredible. And this is why we want to figure out what they are.
All right, Nicole, thank you. That is CBC.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, they're saying it's not alien life. Okay, fine. It's not alien life. Can you tell me something? This whole thing with NASA and all these governments and stuff like this, have you ever sat back and actually thought about why they spend so much money to gaze out there? Like, just sit back. Is it really about just wanting to know where we came from? Or is it more like they want to know if there's other things out there? I think that I don't know. I think the agenda that's in front of us is a true one, but I think there's also an agenda behind that one. So there you go. I'm going to think that this is actually ET calling home, and I'm going to move on to my next story, which just so happens to be once again about space. Now, this one's about a moon, actually. Scientists are almost certain that Europa hosts life. A leading British space scientist maintains that Jupiter's icy moon is very likely to be home to alien organisms. When it comes to seeking out signs of extraterrestrial life within our own solar system, no target has proven more tantalizing than Europa, a world thought to be home to a potentially habitable ocean of liquid water hidden deep within a thick icy exterior shell. One major proponent of this idea is planetary scientist Professor Monica Grady, who outlined her thoughts on the subject at a recent talk at Liverpool Hope University. Not only could there be life forms in the icy ocean of Europa, she argues, but deep caverns of Mars could also provide potential sheltered habitat for extraterrestrial organisms. When it comes to the prospects of life beyond Earth, it's almost a racing certainty that there's life beneath the ice of Europa, she said. Elsewhere, if there's going to be life on Mars, it's going to be under the surface of the planet. There you're protected from solar radiation, and that means there's possibly, you know, ice remaining in the pores of the rocks, which could act as a source of water. If there's something on Mars, it's likely to be very small bacteria. But I think we got a better chance of having slightly higher forms of life on Europa, perhaps similar to the intelligence of an octopus. Overall, she argues, the conditions that led to life on Earth are likely to have occurred elsewhere, too. Our solar system is not a particularly special planetary system. And as far as we know, we still haven't explored all the stars in the galaxy, she said, but I think it's highly likely there will be life elsewhere, and I think it's highly likely they'll be made of the same elements. How cool is that? I think that's great. So there you go. Fast radio bursts, probably a moon or something, or a star, a fast-spinning star. Europa, it has aliens on it. Do you guys know what this sound is? Any idea? That, my friends, is not a shootout in the old Wild West. That, my friends, is a strange phenomenon that was recorded by Dr. Peter Naff, a glaciologist who received over 10 million views for his footage of a piece of ice being dropped down a 290-foot borehole in the ice. The first thing you hear as the ice is falling is the pitch of the sound changing. He said that's the Doppler effect. The Doppler effect, then when the ice hits the bottom of the borehole, the sound doesn't only come straight up. The sound waves start to bounce off the sides of the hole. That's why you hear pew, 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 with a sort of heartbeat sound afterwards. You can check out the sounds for yourself on that video. Just check out sound on ice core dropped on a massive hole. I know it's not that odd of a thing, but like, you know, it's just the weirdest sounds. Okay, my last story is pretty big. Hell, you might even say it's giant. A group of anonymous individuals have been digging tunnels in search of evidence of giants in New Zealand. The mysterious group, whose members have yet to be identified, have been digging out a network of tube-like caves for the better part of 4 years, often working under cover of darkness. Their goal is to unearth evidence of pre-Polynesian giants, or what people call tall ones, who they believe once lived in that region. Concerns have been raised, though. Not only due to the potential for genuine archaeological evidence to be damaged, but also because the landowner has not given them permission to be there. You damn giant hunters, you get off my lawn! You don't know what's going to happen if you find one. They're going to step on you. And if you find one of those giants alive and they come this way, you better stay the hell off my lawn! In one recent video published by the group, an anonymous member presented a large leg bone. This here, my friends, is a human bone of pre-Polynesian inhabitants, he said. You can tell by the triangular shape, it's most likely a tibia, which would make this individual 8 feet 4 inches tall. Regardless of its length, this is an older bone than any human being in New Zealand. Archaeologists later dismissed the bone as that of a moa, or a large extinct bird. Providing proof of 8-foot humans in the world will be bigger than finding Tutankhamun, the leader of the group who was known as IJ, told Radio New Zealand, the most talked about worldwide story of the millennium. As things stand, however, no conclusive, verifiable evidence of these tall ones has materialized, but that doesn't mean that your damn kids are still on my lawn! You get out of here! With your giant hunting gear and your whatnot. Guys, we got a new season, a season 2, with indisputable proof provided by Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters. We had police investigating, well, demonic sounds from McDonald's in Colorado. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm haunting it. An Egyptian board game that was anything but boring. That the Egyptians used to talk to the other side. Mysterious radio bursts that, you know, everyone's saying isn't intelligent, but we all think is actually Captain Marvel. Scientists think Europa's full of life. Ice making weird sounds that just was just really fun to play. And of course, those damn giant hunters are on my lawn! All these stories have been on to Newfoundland! Get out of here!
Hello, everyone, and welcome from Betty, your Oracle, with words of wisdom for your consideration and enjoyment. Welcome the month of March. Hallelujah. Praise everything that perhaps we will get out from under this 6,000 inches of snow that we have outside our door. So, it's the month of March. And immediately when we talk about March, I think the first thing that we think about is, oh, it's Paddy's Day. Well, I'm going to tell everybody the story I tell every Paddy's Day, because I was told by an Irishman that it is indeed not Paddy's Day. Paddy was never Paddy. Paddy was a saint. So, it's Saint Patrick's Day. I actually heard a British woman just a few days ago, and she was only a young woman, talking to her little boy, and they were talking about the month of March, and she was telling him that the next day was Pink Shirt Day, and did he know what that was all about, and she explained that to him. And then she said, and of course, and now we've got, and she was talking about school, so now we've got Paddy's Day coming up, and I thought, you're British, and you don't know that Paddy was never a Paddy? Paddy is Saint Patrick. So please, everyone, on the 17th of March, when you get up and you greet your fellow, whether it be your family, whether it be fellow co-workers, whatever, people on the street, happy Saint Patrick's Day, everyone. Okay, with that being said, and that aside, March is known for a lot more than just Saint Patrick's Day. So the awareness events for March, we've got National Nutrition Month, we've got Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Interesting that all of this is in having to do with our reproductive organs. It's Red Cross Month. And for me, because of reading Ovarian Cancer and Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, I'm saying it's Sacral Chakra Awareness Month. So for anyone who doesn't know what a chakra is, we have energy centers in our body that continuously spin. And the energy centers run up and down our spine. And they're commonly known as chakras. The general consensus is we have seven, when in actual fact we have thousands, because each chakra has its own system and each system has its own system. So we have chakras that go everywhere, but the sacral chakra is the chakra that is in the area of all our reproductive organs. That's why I'm saying that I guess it's the month that we should be very aware of our reproductive organs and make sure that everything is as it should be, that, you know, we don't let anything kind of fly away from us. You know, get things checked, make sure that you're healthy. And March is a good month to do that because we're going to start getting rid of all of this winter underneath the snow. You know, there are stirrings of seeds, and there are stirrings of little insects starting to come to life again, and starting to, you know, so they're waking up from that winter slumber. So I want to read to you from actually the Old Farmer's Almanac, the month of March 2020, holiday fun facts and folklore. March brings with it the promise of gardening and warmer, sunny days in some parts of the world, as Earth turns its frostbitten cheek to winter and springs forth from the vernal equinox. So we're going to read about the month's holidays, happenings, seasonal recipes, gardening tips, moon phrases, folklore, and much more. So there's a little poem here. The brown buds thicken on the trees. Unbound the free streams sing, as March leads forth across the leas, the wild and windy spring. And that was written by Elizabeth Akers Allen. She was born in 1832, and she passed in 1911. The month of March. The month of March was named, I didn't even know this is really interesting, for the Roman god of war. Mars. Traditionally, this was the time of year to resume military campaigns that had been interrupted by winter. Isn't that interesting? Important dates in March. March the 8th is the start of daylight saving time. Yes! It's my time of year. This is the time of year I love the most. Spring. Which begins at 2 a.m. that night. Don't forget to spring forward. Set your clocks ahead 1 hour. We prefer to do this before bedtime on Saturday night so there's no existential confusion in the morning. I've done that lots of times. Gotten up at, you know, 8 o'clock on Sunday morning and right after our spring equinox and got, okay, it's 8 o'clock in the morning? It feels like it's later than that. And then to go towards the telephone and see that the telephone is showing me that it, oh no, it's actually 9 o'clock. But, oh, cool. This is, I just love this time of year. March 8th is also International Women's Day, which is a day that not only celebrates the achievements of women and the progress made towards women's rights, but also brings attention to ongoing struggles for equality around the world. March the 15th is the Ides of March. Legend surrounds this ill-fated day. Beware the Ides of March. Now, if I click on the Ides of March, what does it tell me? The Ides of March has long been considered an ill-fated day, which is the 15th of March. Julius Caesar was assassinated on March the 15th, 44 BC. Historians note that it is likely that a soothsayer named Spurinna had warned Caesar that danger would occur by the Ides of March. William Shakespeare included the phrase, "Beware the Ides of March," in his play, Julius Caesar. The Ides were the 15th days of 4 months, Martius or March, Maius or May, Quintilis or July, and October in the ancient Roman lunar calendar. They were the 13th in all other months, originally Aprilis or April, Iunus or June, Sextilis or August, September, November, and December, Ianarius or January, Februarius or February were later added. The word Ides comes from the Latin word Idus, which is probably derived from the an Etruscan, Etruscan word meaning to divide. Sorry about that. The Ides were originally meant to mark the full moon, the halfway point of the lunar month. But because the Roman calendar months and actual lunar months were of different lengths, they quickly got out of step. The ancient Romans considered the day after the calendar's first day of the month, nones, ninth day of the month before the Ides, inclusive, or Ides of any month as unfavorable. These are called Ides Atri. So we don't want to get back into Ides Atri. Let's see what else is on the go for March. So March 19th brings about March equinox, also called the vernal or spring equinox, marking the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, this... Mom always used to say that on the 21st of March, the sun crosses the line. What line? And I never ever asked her what line. It was always, sun crosses the line today. So this is what it means. On this day, the sun stands directly over Earth's equator. In the Southern Hemisphere, this date marks the autumnal equinox and the beginning of fall. March 29th to the 31st are the borrowing days. According to lore, the last 3 days of March have a reputation for being stormy
They better not be stormy here. They can be stormy with rain. That'd be good. And fog and warm wind, because that'll get rid of some of our snow. However, looking ahead, this year, Easter Sunday will occur on April 2nd, which has nothing to do with March whatsoever. Just for fun days. Did you know that March is National Umbrella Month? Here are some more wacky things to celebrate this month. March the 3rd. What if cats and dogs had opposable thumbs day? March the 9th, International Fanny Pack Day. Okay. March the 13th, National Earmuff Day. You will probably need them on the March the 13th. March the 16th, National Panda Day. Hug a Panda Day. March 21st, absolutely incredible kid day. So you have an incredible child. We all have incredible children. March 21st is their day. March 23rd, World Meteorological Day. March 30th, World Backup Day. Interesting. Interesting. March is full moon, the worm moon. Reaches peak fullness on Monday, March 9th at 1:48 p.m. Look for it that evening as it rises above the horizon. Why is it called a worm moon? Find out in the worm guide. So here we go. For March's full moon will be a superhero. Here's all you need to know. March's full moon, called the worm moon, reaches full peak at 1:48 p.m. on Monday, March the 9th. Look for the spectacularly bright moon as it rises above the horizon that evening. The first supermoon of the year. This full moon will also be the first of three supermoons in 2020, the other two occurring in April and May. Supermoon is the popular nickname given to a full moon that coincides with perigee, which is the point in the moon's orbit of Earth where it's closest to our planet. While at perigee, the full moon appears a bit brighter and about 7% larger than a typical full moon. However, don't go out on the night of March the 9th expecting to see a moon that's noticeably more massive. Unless you were to see them side by side, the differences between the supermoon and a regular full moon can be very difficult to perceive. And then they've listed all the dates. The first quarter is March the 2nd. The full moon is March the 9th. The last quarter is March the 16th. And the new moon is March the 24th. March full moon names. Okay. Owl of Hollow Tree speaking mysteriously. When the moon's phantom light makes my dim character bright. Dorothea, Maria, Ogilvy. She was a Scottish poet from 1823 to 1895. Historically, full moon names were used to track the seasons, and for this reason are often closely associated to nature. I found out some other interesting information. In the Northern Hemisphere, I found this really cool. I heard somebody the other day say that we're in whatever part of the world, that the 26th of February was all, actually, it was a cousin of mine, an elderly cousin of mine, who told me that when she was a girl, the 26th of February was always known as the beginning of spring. However, what I read yesterday, in the Northern Hemisphere, the meteorological beginning of spring, so according to all the meteorologists, you know, the Eddie Shares and the whoever's of the world, the beginning of spring occurs on the first day of March. And the 21st is the equinox. So the 21st is when the sun crosses the line. But the actual first day of spring is today. Yes! Yes! I get really excited when I see those tiny little green, bright green leaves on the trees, knowing it's spring and everything is coming alive again. I was actually going to do a little reading from a book today, from an old Newfoundland book, but I've spent a lot of time talking about this month. And the month of March, yes, it's the third month of the year. Yes, there are 9 more months left in this year, and that's great. 2020 is revealing itself more and more, month over month. And I watched it in January, and I'm watching it still. This is the year that the truth will be known. Now, when I say the truth, I'm talking about truth in our personal lives. So if we've been sitting on the fence about something and decide not knowing what to decide, we all know in our heart of hearts, when it comes to anything personal to do with us, truth is the most important aspect of anything we can do in our lives. Be truthful. We can wax over, we can put a polish and a shine on everything that we feel like, or we can take every single thing in our lives and make it as dark as night, if you wanted to. The truth lies somewhere in between. And the truth, all of us, our subconscious knows what the truth is. If that means there's someone in your life or someone was in your life who's not in your life anymore and you're questioning why, when you sit quietly and you ask the question why, you will be given the answer. It will come in a very short burst. If it's the conversation that goes on, well, you know, they didn't like you very much, or you didn't give them what they wanted, or that's your ego talking. So if you ask the question, why did this person turn their back on me? Why was it necessary for me to turn my back on this person? Your heart will give you that answer, and it will be a very quick answer. It'll be the very first thing you hear when you ask the question. And that's the way it is with everything in our lives. Ask a question and you will receive an answer. But it will be the very first thing you hear after you ask the question. If it's positive, if it's negative, that's not truth. Okay? The truth is always positive. There's always a positive in there somewhere. Source is not going to give you anything. And I've been asked this question several times. Will your spirit guide? Will your angels? Will whoever is on the other side helping? Will they lead us in a negative direction? No, they will not. That is not their purpose. Their sole purpose is to keep us headed in the right direction. Our ego is what takes us off direction, out of course. So, to end this transmission this month, and when I say transmission, a lot of this comes out of my mouth. I have no idea where it comes from. So to end March's recording, I will say happy spring, everybody. I hope March brings you everything that you've been asking for. I hope you find your truth in March. And if you don't find it in March, know sometime this year you will find this is the truth. This answer is the truth. Thank you for listening. Back to you, John.
Power on. Uh-oh.
I'll get the broom.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the Lair for March 2020. This month, I'll be quite honest, is one of procrastination. I'm working on my thesis at the same time, and really in the full slog of it. We've been surrounded by snow now for what seems like forever. So ultimately, at the end of the day, we're trying to find little things that brighten our day. So when I found this little story, I really thought it would be a great one to share with you. And I found it from Science News, and it really kind of played on the theme on a lot of our episodes here on the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. It involves questioning what's normal, what's odd, what's different. I think one of the things that many of our listeners might have in common with us is we think about things that might be a little bit different. What type of organisms are out there that's a little strange, a little weird? What would happen if something breathed without oxygen? What would happen if something consumed something unusual for food? And these type of questions lead into the natural progression of things, such as, is there life on other planets? You know, how did life evolve here? These sort of things. So the American Friends of Tel Aviv University, they've published a little story about a little tiny guy that's kind of cool. So a tiny relative of jellyfish and coral, it's a little parasite and it lives in salmon. Yeah, salmon, the fish, mussels. Discovered him to be non-oxygen breathing. He has less than 10 cells, and he really demonstrates that evolution can go in a little odd way. The researchers at Tel Aviv University have found this little guy. What they were doing is that they were doing whole genome sequencing of all sorts of fish parasites. What they did notice is that when they were assembling all the different genomes, they found that this little guy did not contain mitochondrial genome. So what the mitochondria is, it's the little powerhouse of the cell where oxygen is captured and it makes energy. So by not having it, it really indicated that the animal was not breathing oxygen at all. Until this time, until this discovery, there was really debate regarding whether organisms that belong to the animal kingdom could survive in non-oxygenated environments. The assumption that all animals are breathing oxygen was based, among other things, on the fact that animals are multicellular, highly developed organisms, which first appeared on Earth when oxygen levels begin to rise. The researcher that was part of the study, Professor Hunchen, said it's not quite clear to us yet how the parasite generates energy. It may be drawing it from the surrounding fish cells, or it may have a different type of respiration, such as oxygen-free breathing, which typically characterizes anaerobic, non-animal organisms. So this is really exciting. It really bears an enormous significance for evolutionary research. Professor Hutchins says it is generally thought that during evolution, organisms become more and more complex, and that simple, single-celled or few-celled organisms are the ancestors of complex organisms. But here, right before us, is an animal whose evolutionary process is quite the opposite, living in an oxygen-free environment. It has shed the unnecessary genes responsible for aerobic respiration and become an even simpler organism. I thought this was pretty cool, and I thought that's quite appropriate to share with our odd listeners. Thanks, John.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
C is for your claws so sharp to me. R
is for reports we seldom see. Why do we ignore creatures of myth and lore? P is even more puzzling monsters we adore. T is for tales passed through the years. I is for icons of all our fears. D is for discovery of strange creatures in every country. It's the cryptid corner or to Newfoundland. Yeah, yeah.
One and all, it's Brian Bowden here from Inside the Goblin Universe and Nobody But Me, Nobo Boomy, which all can be found at insidethegoblinuniverse.podbean.com. Come stop by, take a listen, share, like. It makes an excellent gift. Thanks, Johnny, for bringing me in. Is that a shillelagh in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Forget that. Don't answer that question. I really don't want to know. But yes, it is the month of March, and March is all about St. Patrick's Day, Ireland, and being Irish. Everyone claims their Irish heritage and shares in the revelry of the day with a load of spirits, fun, laughter, and joy. It's so special. Justin Trudeau puts on his green face before getting his drink on. All right. Let's get into it. Yes, saints be praised, for it is the season for St. Patrick, the wee lad who helped rid the snakes from Ireland, as opposed to Brian Boru, King of the Irish, and the leprechauns. And today I'm going to be bringing you some of the great facts about leprechauns. So sit back, take your notes while you let the spirits wash over ye all. According to the book, The Element Encyclopedia of Magic Creatures by John and Caitlin Matthews, the legend of leprechauns can be traced back to the 8th century tale of water spirits called leprechaun, meaning small body. The legend eventually evolved into this mischievous house fairy set to haunt cellars and drink heavily. Leprechauns are shoemakers. Some researchers claim that the word leprechaun comes from the Irish le borgan, meaning shoemaker. And they may be the sprites of mean vocation. I didn't know there was a whole industry there, but that would be it. They're making you shoes. If you happen to come across a leprechaun, be sure to hold on to him tightly. According to Irish legends, people lucky enough to capture a leprechaun can barter his freedom for 3 wishes, but dealing with a leprechaun can be tricky, so be careful. And speaking of that trickster, a leprechaun is a trickster figure who cannot be trusted. Folklorist Carol Rose offers a typical tale of leprechaun trickery in her encyclopedia, Sprites, Fairies, Leprechauns, and Goblins. It concerns a man who managed to get a leprechaun to show him his bush in the field where his treasure was located. Having no spade in hand, the man marked the tree with one of his red garters, then kindly released the sprite and went for a spade. Upon returning, almost instantaneously, he found that every one of the numerous trees in the field supported a red garter. Tricky little bastard, isn't he? Like most fairies, leprechauns have a distinctive sound associated with them. While the Irish banshee can be identified as a mournful wail, leprechauns are recognized by their tap, tap, tapping of their cobbler hammer, driving nails into shoes. It announces that they're near. Leprechauns are always male, and in 1825 Book of Fairy Legends noted that leprechauns seem to be entirely male and solitary. They're often described as bearded men dressed in green and wearing buck shoes. Sometimes they wear a little pointed cap and hat and may smoke a pipe. I don't know about you, but I know them always smoking a pipe. Leprechauns weren't always dressed in green, by the way. Early tales of creatures reported red clothing with leprechauns. One of the most recognizable leprechauns in popular culture is Lucky the Leprechaun, the mascot of General Mood's breakfast cereal, Lucky Charms. Give me my Lucky Charms. Pink stars, blue clovers, well, you know the rest of it. On the other end of the pop culture spectrum, you have the homicidal Lubin from the Leprechaun horror comedy film series. Give me my gold. Leprechauns are a mortal tale figure. The legend warns against greed and the folly of trying to get rich quick. Oh, and these wee people are always laughing while they run. This is because the grass tickles their balls. Only kidding. Okay, so I made up the last one. But it goes without saying that these wee people sure do like to have a good time everywhere they go. And if you should come across one of them, tip your hat and say, good day, sir. Another round of mead and fresh horses for the men, good sir. Back to you, Johnny.
Before we start with tonight's amazing guest, the whole premise of this podcast is about discovering things that are out of the ordinary. I recently found a service that helps businesses stand out from the crowd. It's called Blip Billboards. They help businesses of any size with any budget get seen on large format digital billboards. For me, seeing my podcast on a big billboard to get the word out was a dream come true. I never thought I'd be able to afford it in a million years, but thanks to Blip and their pay what you want approach, this dream is a reality that truthfully didn't cost a whole lot. It didn't take a whole lot of my time. All you gotta do is pick the billboard you'd like to advertise on, set your daily schedule and budget, then upload your own ad design. Once your ad is approved, your ad will be live for everyone to see. Blip Billboards is great for standing out locally or boosting awareness nationally. So whether you're a small tech startup, a local restaurant, or anywhere in between, your business can now afford to make these big impressions in the locations that matter to you. What would your Blip Billboard say? Why don't you try Blip Billboards today? Go to my special URL to sign up for a free account, and you'll get a $25 Blip credit to help get you started. So check it out down in the show notes, guys. BlipBillboards.com/odd is your keyword. Jump down there. All the links are down there below. Tonight, I am so fortunate to have an old friend back on the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, all the way back, it seems like forever ago, to episode 38. I had just this amazing guest come on, and we talked about the New World Order and conspiracies in general. I'm so honored to have her back on my show. Nothing, like, honestly, there's no better feeling in the world, because now I feel like I have an old friend on the line, and I just cannot wait to once again chat with Dina Ray. How are you tonight?
Thanks so much for having me on. I love your show. You're such a great host. I'm doing great, and I look forward to chatting with you.
You know, it's crazy. Like, it's so hard to get on my show now that I'm pretty sure it was almost a year ago that we started the ball rolling on getting you back on. And, like, I look back at the guest list, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's so bad that I can't have some old friends come back. But I really want to make an effort this year. I want 2020 to be a reconnection year, so I'm going to try to get some older guests on. And I must say, I absolutely loved our show. One of my favorite parts of our show actually had nothing to do with our interview. It was the podcast art of Lady Gaga giving the Illuminati sign. So I thought that was so cool. And, you know, we talked about so much stuff. So, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead. I'm gonna dig right on in. And just going to ask before we even go down the old NWO railway track, so to speak. How have things been in Dana's life since last we spoke?
Great. They've been really exciting. I have a new book out this year. It's called Crowns and Cabals. And it is a futuristic apocalyptic tale of, again, what the world would look like if New World Order came into play. And anybody who watches the news, whatever side of the aisle you're on, or if you're not on any side, you can't help but wonder, where are we going? What direction are we going? And it seems as quite a certain set of people, whether you want to call them the deep state, or some people call them the establishment, I call them the inner circle, because that's who they are and that's who they've always been. So for me, the book is, yes, of course, fiction, but it's also a warning and a prediction as well.
Well, there you go. Brand new book. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. Is it out yet, Dina?
Yes, it is. It's on Amazon. And it's called Crowns and Cabals, and it's e-book and print.
Excellent. So there you go. Gotta love it. And I love it when you say, got another book, because it makes me know how long it's actually been since we talked. I'm glad to hear things are going well. But just because things are going well for you doesn't mean things are going well for our tired old world out there. You know what? I just got to ask you. It's time for us to check in on some old friends of ours. And when I say the NWO, I don't mean Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash and Razor Ramon. I actually mean the Illuminati, the New World Order. Kind of check in, since last we spoke, some of the weird things that have been going on. Why don't you bring us up to speed with where that new plot, or shall we say old plot, is to right now?
Well, for my newest book, I've done a lot of research with particularly the United Nations, because I believe that their purpose is to promote globalism and, of course, ultimately become the only government the world has. And its leaders won't just lead a country, they will lead the world. And right now they're in training, shall we say. They're practicing up, they're getting stronger, they're getting more powerful. Some of, you know, in my opinion, some of the agendas that I'm hearing from our politicians, like this Green New Deal, I hate to, you know, if you have any Ocasio-Cortez fans out there, that's the congresswoman from New York who's very popular here in America. Do you know, John, do you know who she is?
I think I've seen her a few times, come across Facebook, actually.
She's real famous. She won an election, and I think she's in Queens, New York. And she's only 29 years old, and she was a bartender. And she's got the whole entire country now buzzing about a Green New Deal, as if this were her idea. If this was her idea, and it's picked straight off the website of the UN. This is one of the sustainable goals off of the one of their newer agendas. So this is what we're seeing right now. We're seeing politicians come up with, quote, ideas, end quote, that are not their ideas. They're straight from the UN. Because what is going on there? We're getting closer and closer and closer to becoming a one-world government. So I want to point that out. I can't just, you know, say it's this person, it's that person, it's that person. It's a good, I'd say a good 500 to 1,000 people are involved in this, and they have their own underlings who are semi-involved. And then the rest of us, well, we're either going to be forced to go with the program, or we're going to be in that depopulation ring.
What do you think about the whole angle with Canada? I hate to say it, but, you know, I'm up north and I'm kind of worried because, well, Trudeau kind of legalized marijuana, which was a big step. But the reality of it is, man, a lot of his policies are all about getting rid of certain groups and making everyone, well, to quote himself, a part of people kind. It seems to me like we're getting grouped together. And your ideas have crossed my mind quite a few times, especially over the last year or so, and a lot of more controversial decisions were made by the Canadian government. You know, it makes me kind of wonder, is this, you know, just different people in on the same thing?
Absolutely. And Trudeau, no disrespect to your listeners, is part of the problem. He's not part of the solution. Now, I don't want to, you know, sit here and talk about like one of Trump's crazy supporters about how he walks on water and all this other stuff, because he certainly does not. But he's not in on it. He is completely not in on it. So what's going on right now here is they're trying to impeach him for anything. They've been trying for 3.5 years. Huh?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I don't know how much you guys follow American politics, but again, the New World Order's hand is showing, meaning that whether you like Trump or not, or you don't like Trump, he was elected as the president. So quit trying to get him impeached. Quit trying to nullify the election. The people chose him to be their leader, and he's trying to lead. And every time he gets going on the wall, which, of course, New World Order, you can't have a wall. Are you kidding me? It's got to be open borders. You can't have any borders. Open borders will become no borders. That's the point of New World Order. So he's doing all this crazy stuff. He wants a wall. He's America first. He doesn't believe in globalism. He's not sold on this carbon footprint tax. He's all these things that he stands for are anti-globalistic policy. So I'm not the guy is out there, no question about it. But he's not playing ball with the in crowd. So what does he get in return? His entire presidency is trying to get nullified every single day of his term. And we are seeing that in England and the UK. Did not they vote for Brexit, correct?
Yes.
Are they still in Brexit? Are they still in the European Union?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
3.5 years later, we've got the Yellow Jackets in France who are really pissed off. They're celebrating their 1 year anniversary since their big protest. Again, this has to do with the globalist policies of France. We've got all of this stuff going on in China, and no one's stepping in to help. Well, again, why? Because the protests going on in China are, again, trying to be more nationalistic, and we got to put the kibosh on that. So that is my point of the book. We've got major powers all over the globe trying to unify the best that they can, trying to, like Trudeau, have a one people, a one world people, a global citizen. Have you not heard this term, I'm a citizen of the world?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that mean? Does that mean New World Order? That means you have a president of the world? That means you have a king of the world? You have a prime minister of the world? What does that mean? So I'm just getting kind of angry about it because it's not going to be a good thing for us. It might be a good thing if you're, you know, in a third world country and things are really terrible for you and you're living in a hut and New World Order comes in and they offer to relocate you, they offer to train you, then it might be a good deal. But for middle class people in first world countries, it's you're going to get screwed. So I guess that is my point. I get it always matters what side of the fence you're on, but for me as an American, it's not a good thing. And there's a lot of steps into getting a new world order going. And of course, one of the biggest ones is depopulation. And there's a lot of theories on that. And in my book, I believe that will depopulate through a nuclear war. But other people, and their prediction is, you know, just as valid, they think that there'll be some kind of pandemic. They think there'll be some kind of biogas released. But there's all kinds of theories on how to get rid of a large segment of society quickly. And I hope we never find out.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned depopulation because I was reading a report the other day. I can't remember the exact numbers and stuff, but it was just talking about the trends of like how many people are being born per year and how low the amount of population really is right now, where it probably would have been if things had continued. For example, my grandmother and grandfather had like 13, 14 kids, whereas my mother and father had two. I mean, I like to think I'm amazing and I'm worth 17 people, but the reality of it is we still have less and less people. Could it be that by keeping populations, well, I hate to use the word poor, but middle class and not exactly, you know, so rich they can have as many kids as they want. Could this be a form of population control itself?
Absolutely, but it's not doing the job fast enough. We currently have 7.53 billion people on this planet, and despite, like you're saying, people are really only replacing themselves in rich countries, as you pointed out. We've got, you know, population explosion in other parts of the world. And with advanced medical care, a lot of babies are making it. Now we've got, you know, inoculations and vaccinations and all kinds of things. So they're surviving these, you know, kinds of diseases that have wiped out children in years past. However, I've read a report that when we get to 10 billion people, which they predict, even though, like you said, population is slowing, we're going to be at 10 billion in 2050. So that's only 31 years from now. Now, I don't know. I could be still alive. It's very possible. My kids will hopefully still be alive. But once we reach 10 billion, we can't sustain ourselves as a planet. We can't feed. There's not going to be enough food. There's not going to be enough recycling, waste plants, all of that. We can't do it. And the scientists know it. So, again, there's more mild forms of depopulation. There's, of course, some people, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but some people believe the new abortion policies in America and some of the states where you could get an abortion at 9 months pregnant is a form of population control. Now, if you think about it, it's kind of creepy. And some people even believe that they're motivating pregnant women to have abortions at 9 months because they can make some money on it as well. They can get stem cells and medical research from the infant and make a lot of money. So it's like twofold. You know, there's all kinds of theories on population control. All kinds of pandemics, AIDS in itself, people don't even believe it ever was, you know, from a pilot and a monkey and all this other stuff. Nobody really buys that. Most people think it was created in a lab. So we already have population control. I would even go as far to say this whole opioid crisis and this lack of treatment for addicted people is a form of population control. I don't really see anybody doing anything about it. We got homeless people all over the place in all of our major cities, and most of them are addicted to drugs, and nobody's really doing anything about it. So that could be another mild form of population control. But will it be enough? Will it keep our numbers down so we can get maybe squeak out another 10 more years before it's just too much? Now, some people think, well, if we don't eat meat, if we give up our meat and we start eating bugs and things like that, that maybe we could do it. You're seeing more and more of, you know, grasshopper flour and different kinds of powders you can use instead of flour for protein. And a lot of people are pushing for this whole vegan movement. Again, is that going to be enough? I don't know. I honestly think that they're going to start thinning out the herd, so to speak.
What do you think would be some of the ways they do that? I mean, the first thing that pops in my head is, well, another war, but this time with more people involved. I mean, that's the first thing everyone always goes to. There's nothing that has butchered more people, you know, in the modern era anyway, than war. But there's also a case for, you know, the war in Afghanistan and stuff like that has been one of the least bloody wars. It's the amount of people killed in comparison to World War One and Two just pales in comparison. Do you think it might be another war, or do you think this might be like where we start seeing, you know, like maybe something unleashed on people, like we're talking like bioweapons, stuff like that? What do you think is the chances here? Because it sounds to me like if you really wanted to control population and bring it down, that the first thing you're going to do is, well, spread some kind of new disease, something that really gets there. And We got reports out this week from, actually, it came on CTV News here in Canada, that a lot of the flu shots from 4 years ago are completely moot now. What that means is that that virus is mutated. It's actually mutated. They might not even need any help. We might be getting knocked out by the flu. So what are you thinking here? Do you think it's going to be another war, or do you think it might be like a bioweapon of some sort?
I think you're totally on it, big time. Of course, I think it's going to end in war, but there's going to be some small types of population control first. Like you're saying, bioweapon is essentially an easy one. Nobody can prove it was government made, and it'll kill a bunch of people, and doctors will be stumped, and they'll say, oh, it was some kind of play, it was going around, and that'll work for a while. And then somebody eventually will figure it out, so now they're going to have to up the game. And like you said, I honestly think that war is the fastest way, because if one country sets off a nuke, well, then another country with, you know, a mutually assured destruction policy is going to set off a nuke. And before you know it, you're going to have a little game of tennis going back and forth with those nuclear bombs. And that's, I mean, you're not just killing a few thousand people. You're wiping out a city at a time with each bomb. You're wiping out a city. You're wiping out, geez, New York City alone. That's, what, 8 million, 9 million people? You could wipe that out with one or two bombs. And go back and forth. What areas are of the most value, and we'll keep those. And what areas can the world do without? We'll hit those. What areas have people who are unskilled and sickly? We'll wipe out those. This is going to be very calculated. It's not going to be a bunch of hotheads throwing missiles at each other, like in the Middle East, for example. It's going to be very calculated. And I wouldn't even be surprised if there's some kind of phony outrage going on between two countries to get the whole thing started.
I really hope it's not Canada and the U.S. Oh, man, that would suck.
No. I know.
I really hope not. We're way too close. Way too close.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we look at different conspiracies over the years and stuff like that, and it makes you kind of wonder, are there other conspiracies that have taken place that the NWO are behind that we've kind of already know? One of the things that really gets me going, you know, hate to bring up our old Rothschild friends again, Dina, but, you know, let's be honest, the entire world runs on a fiat paper currency, and, yep. You know, things are getting worse and worse and worse, and, well, where do you think this is all headed to? Because here's one form of population control. Cut people off from their money, basically. I mean, we're seeing things nowadays that I never dreamed we'd ever see. Oh, my God, in Canada, we're having reverse mortgages now. How greedy are people that they want to keep the wealth? They don't want to even have a house when they're gone to leave anybody. Do you know what I mean? We're getting to that point. Do you think that this might be another form of, well, I can't really say population control because, you know, poor people live and have kids, but the reality of it is, yeesh, us middle-classers are really getting hit hard here.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. That's one of the elements of New World Order. You have to get rid of the middle class because they're in the way. They're the ones that have some skin in the game, so to speak. They own, like I said, they own their property. They might have a bank account or two. They have some stock. The middle class are the ones to get out of the way. So I've blogged about reverse mortgages. They infuriate me because they do this commercial, like this sweet old couple, and oh, wouldn't it be great if we had some extra money so we can hang out with our grandkids, and they just make it seem so innocent. And it's like they don't even realize that you're just giving your house away to a bank. And the money that you paid the bank for your house in the first place, they never even had when they lent you it. To me, how can you lend money out that you don't even have? the Federal Reserve can lend out 10 times more money than they actually have legally. How is that even possible? I couldn't lend you, if I wanted to lend you $100,000, well, I don't have $100,000. How can I do that? Well, if I'm a bank, I could. It just doesn't make any sense. And then when you can't pay back the phony loan in the first place, they take your house. It just, or you want to do a reverse mortgage? Okay, well, they give you more fiat fake money, and then they get something that's tangible in return for nothing, for nothing. And, oh my God, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, all of them, they have just created, and it's not just the Federal Reserve, it's the International Monetary Fund as well. They're a total spinoff of the Federal Reserve. So we're getting all of the money centralized in a few dozen people's hands. It's just not right. The media does a piss poor job on reporting this. I can't even, you know, this last thing that we had as a country and as a globe in 2008. I mean, I was my block. I had two or three foreclosures on my block alone. I live in Texas now, but at that point I lived in Illinois. Two or three foreclosures on a block. I mean, that's ridiculous.
We're at a point too now in Canada where Newfoundland's an interesting place, because what happens is that we're kind of like behind the States by about 10 years, realistically. And that might sound a bit strange, but it really is true, because it's only now that Newfoundland, which is, you know, the east, most easterly point in Canada, you are seeing just poverty like you've never seen it before. You are seeing businesses closing constantly. Constantly, constantly. And the only thing that's really keeping going are these big chains that are coming in, like Costco and obviously Walmart and stuff like that. And they're coming and they're making great money. Right? But the thing is, all the local stuff's drying up here, and everywhere you work, everywhere you walk to, it's just like walk, 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 house, walk, 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 business sold, walk, walk, walk. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. We're a population of 500,000. Barely anybody lives in Newfoundland. It's a very tiny, tiny place. But reality of it is, it's very blatant that our economy, which Newfoundland's is totally based on oil, 100%, now that you've seen a dip in that economy, you see, man, oh man, what poverty you see here in comparison to 10 years ago, it'll blow your mind.
So yeah, you would be, like you said, 10 years behind. That's how it was back in 2008. It was, you know, it was so sad. And all of this was, well, the banks to me are the number one culprit. And, you know, a lot of people, as you've already mentioned, are greedy. It's, oh, I want to buy a $800,000 home and put down no money, okay? And I work at McDonald's, so I can't afford it, but what the heck? And the banks would give them the loan. And it's like, why not? Because if the person can't pay for it, well, they get the house and they don't have to the federal government pays them back with their insurance and all of that. So why not? There's no skin off your back. Now, would you loan somebody a bunch of money who worked at McDonald's, you know, basically and had no money to invest on their own? No, of course not. But a bank would, because it's a no-lose situation for them. And bad loan that they made. And then the people who bought these houses are just walking away like, oh, well, I guess it didn't work out. And it ruined it for everybody. Everybody's value of everything went down. People who lost their jobs and had a lot of money invested in those homes walked away with a house worth half price and got nothing back in return. It was just a mess. And the banks can do that. That's legal. And it doesn't matter who's the president or who's the speaker or any of that. The banks pretty much own that entire Washington, D.C. I'm going to guess the same as in Canada. And we just got to put up with it. It's ridiculous. There really should be someone to come and save the day on all of this.
You know, it's crazy the amount of people out there who are aware that this model is just, it doesn't make any sense. Basically, in order to drive the economy, we have to go further into debt. It's the only thing that'll make it go. We have to print more and more inflation, right? So, yeah. You know, and it's interesting, when you actually look at the history of money and where it actually comes from, what it actually is, it's a paper note denoting gold, basically. And there's no easier way to explain it than that. And inflation is basically us printing money when we don't have the gold in the bank. So who says anything is worth anything anymore, right? Yeah. That's why these things like houses and cars, these tangible things that actually do have value, are kind of being clawed back now. Man, oh man, oh man. If this population continues to be in recession for another 10 years, and then a big world war hits, I mean, what are we going to do?
We're going to be
slaughtered like cattle, man. We're not even going to have the money to defend ourselves at home. Like, and then there's this other part of it, too, you know, and don't get me wrong. Like, I don't want to get in a big debate about guns and who should have them and stuff like that and rights and all this. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we're really not training our home people. Like, 50 years ago, it was all about everyone has a gun, everyone get in shape, everyone be ready to fight a war. And now it's everyone's lazy, everyone's tired, everyone's stressed, everyone is completely absorbed in other things like social media. Like, I can walk out and, like, people aren't even looking at you anymore. It's insane. Yeah. What is going on with our heads down? I bet you the NWO knows.
Well, you're absolutely right. They have studies that are showing that are especially the younger generation who, I mean, I didn't grow up with the cell phone. When I was in high school, only rich people had cell phones, and they were huge. There were these big, huge phones that lost reception all the time. And I didn't get a cell phone till, you know, late college, early adulthood, when they became reasonable in the mid 90s area. So I don't have that the world revolves around me and my cell phone mentality. But the kids today, oh my, they're walking into the street with cars going back and forth looking at their phone. They're walking into oncoming traffic because they're in the middle of some kind of conversation through their phone. It's almost like intentional. Like, let's dumb everybody down. Let's dumb them all down, get them hooked on this whole social media thing. And again, we can do what we want to do politically, academically, monetarily, and no one's paying attention. You're exactly right. No one is paying attention. And that's the scary part. We got to be paying attention. Because something big is brewing. Something as big is really brewing, and the powers that be are waiting for the right moment. And I don't know how to. I guess I've been shooting a couple times. I'm certainly not exactly Miss NRA, but my husband has guns, and if I didn't have a husband, I wouldn't know how to shoot for protection. There's no doubt about that. But we all should know something about guns, because it's not just bad people shooting up schools. It's good people saving the day that have the guns, too. We all got to know how to fight. That's a Second Amendment in this country. That was the second most important thing that our forefathers thought about. We have to be able to fight if the government gets out of control. And that's a big part of my book is this, you know, this gun control. That's a big part of New World Order. And right now we've got, you know, the Democrats are trying to pick their candidate for 2020. And some of these candidates, this one in particular, his name is Beto O'Rourke. And I think he didn't have enough money or something. He dropped out, but he wanted gun control to the point of, if you don't voluntarily bring your weapons into the police department for confiscation, the law enforcement will come to your house and search it and take them. That was his platform. Now, How can that be? This is the America, the Second Amendment, and you're talking about going into somebody's home without a search warrant and taking their guns? It's amazing to me. And again, that's part of New World Order, getting everybody, you got to register for your gun so the government knows who at least all of the legal gun holders are. If they don't know who all the illegal ones are, obviously, which is a big problem in your city streets. But that's a big part. They want you to be poor. They want you to be defenseless. And there's a couple other things they want too. And not to totally change the subject, but a big part of New World Order is getting rid of all religions. They don't want it. You can't have a religion because that means you're not totally in allegiance with the government. This is coming straight from Karl Marx as well, as a way to organize the masses and control the masses. So we got a lot of things going against us, I guess. I know I'm rambling right now. Sorry, John.
Rambling is awesome. I love rambling. Rambling is exactly what the world needs. it's a podcast. Where the hell else are you going to ramble? Really? You know what really got me, though? It's funny. I don't think, though, it's the segregation of religion that's the issue. I think it's the cultural appropriation that's going on that's really blowing my mind. And this is something that's, like, new. I never even knew what the hell that even meant until a little while ago, and I was actually watching a small thing on Gwen Stefani. Everyone knows Gwen Stefani from No Doubt. Can you remember, like, about 10 years ago or so, where she had this whole crazy Harajuku Girls thing going on? Do you remember that? Once you've seen that song, Bananas, and all this. And anyway, they did this whole thing about how she was using cultural appropriation. And I don't even know what the hell that was or why it would be offensive. But it's the idea that we mimic other cultures and make them part of our own, basically. And, you know, it's funny because, damn, is that not the same thing? Is that not the same thing as what the NWO are supposedly trying to do? Like you just mentioned a minute ago. We're trying to basically paint everybody with the same brush, and we do that by using, well, the biggest people in media. We talked about Lady Gaga and some of the symbolism she's used, and Gwen Stefani is well known for using the one eye thing all the time. So it's interesting that that's after going on too, right?
Yeah.
And now we heard about this next big thing. Right now, we're recording this, of course. By the time this gets released, I mean, this might be old news to everybody, an old hat, but Taylor Swift right now is fighting to use her old music, which now belongs to another company, basically. She sold the rights to the music after she made it, basically. In other words, she cashed out, right? And some artists do that. But anyway, they're basically using it as an excuse for her not to perform. And I wonder if that has anything to do with an agenda and who they want to stick in there in her place. It'd be very interesting who they shove in there. I wonder if it'll be Beyonce.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah. She's a big fan of New World Order, obviously, as is her husband, Jay-Z. But speaking of celebrities, I just love this story. I'm full disclosure, I'm a Christian. That Kanye West is making, he's got to be infuriating the inner circle because he is totally going. Do you know who he is by chance?
Oh, God, yes, man. Kanye West is really well known in Canada for a bunch of different reasons, but mainly because they really did try to turn him into a laughing stock in many different. Like, honestly, over the last 10 years, they've done everything. They even made fun of him on South Park. Yep. Yeah, I know him very, very well.
Yeah, he's got that new Jesus is King album. He was just here in Texas. He was in Houston at the biggest church in the world, the Joel Osteen Mega Church.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's where they, Lakewood.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Joel Osteen. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, he was a guest there today. He's making his rounds. He's saying how he loves Trump, how he's a born again Christian, how he wants to run for president one day himself. I mean, he's just.
Oh my God! Can you imagine the guy who sings "Gold Digger" is the new president?
I love that song. It's so funny.
I love that song.
I know. But he's taken seriously by these religious icons. They're taking him seriously, and they're welcoming him in their little clique, which is kind of cool because religion puts a huge wrench in New World Order, huge wrench. And not to get too off topic, but the Pope, this new Pope, and I don't want to offend any of your listeners who are Catholic. That's definitely not my goal. But the new Pope is probably the most interesting Pope the Church has ever seen. And he's started this thing where he's invited heads of other religions to come to church, and that together they pray together. And I'm thinking, well, they're not all praying to the same God, so why are they praying together? Well, obviously they're trying to make a one. They're trying to what was your word? Culturally appropriate?
Yeah. Cultural appropriation.
They're trying to I think the word is synchronization, or I'm probably mispronouncing the word, but they're trying to do that now with religion. He's inviting all of these heads of different religions into the church, and they're praying together. And in Revelation, it says at the end of times that a common worship, a common faith, will emerge instead of the distinction that we sort of have right now. He's got this Pope also is preaching for no borders anywhere. So how can you preach for no borders and then not be in on the New World Order, right? I mean, why no borders, no barriers? He wants that all erased. So I just like to mention some of these things. He's made videos with other leaders praying together, holding hands. He's made speeches about a universal agenda. He's proposing a unity with Christians and Muslims. Not that this is a bad thing, but he mentioned how maybe priests can get married now, which is, kind of strange. But other religions do that, so maybe that's part of this whole melding together. He's denounced capitalism. Well, how can you denounce, if you're denouncing capitalism, what's the alternative? Communism, which is a big part of New World Order. He's read from the Quran. Just a few things.
It's funny. When something like this happens like once a year, you don't really think much on it. But when you put them all together, it's like, man, like, geez, you're right. These are a lot of crazy things this Pope has done. And don't get me wrong, I love this Pope. He's like been my favorite one. So, oh my God, I'm so into this conspiracy. I'm up to my neck. I didn't even know it, Dina.
He was also in an interview maybe about 6 months to a year ago where he was quoted as saying that hell doesn't exist. Huh. His words. He doesn't believe hell exists. Well, God mentions it a couple times here and there in the Bible.
And so did every other pontiff before him. Strange. Guys and gals, we're near the end of the interview now. I just want to make sure everyone knows, though, where they can find Dina Ray. Let's be honest, new book's out. She can find it on Amazon. What's the name of that book again, Dina?
Crowns and Cabals. Cabals is with the C, just in case you're not the greatest speller. I love spell check myself. Dina Ray, D-I-N-A-R-A-E. You can find me on Facebook, Dina Ray Books. You can find me on Twitter, at Halo of the Damned, no spaces. You can find me on Pinterest, Dina Ray Books. You can find me on Instagram, Dina Ray 2018. I have two blogs. I have Conspiracy Crackpot, and I have Dina Ray's Write Stuff at blogspot.com. I'm all over the place. There is another Dina Ray, though. I do want to, you know, put that out there. She's young and hot, and she sings with Eminem. That is not me.
You're middle-aged and good-looking, and you talk on my podcast, though. That's all that matters. Dina Ray, thanks so much for coming home to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. A really interesting conversation. I'm glad I did some homework. I always got to research before I have you on, because let me tell you, me and you go pretty deep down the old rabbit hole, hey? Take care of yourself. Blast. Take care of yourself. Have a great night.
You too. Thank you so much.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. Drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.